Welcome to AmiSites, a podcast that offers you access to thought leaders who can help you expand your entrepreneurial toolbox. Learn from seasoned entrepreneurs who have already walked in your shoes and can help you with your day-to-day business decisions. Join the founder and CEO of Multifunding, Ami Kassar, and his co-host, Lynn Ozer, the president of Multifunding, aka the SBA Queen, as they help you navigate, grow, and stay in control of your business.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the next edition of AmiSites. I'm Ami Kassar, your host, along with my co-host, Lynn Ozer, aka SBA Queen. So happy to have my friend and EO mate from Philly chapter, Karan Shah, here. He's an incredible entrepreneur. He's a great human, a great story. Can't wait to dig in and share with you more about his journey and his adventures. Karan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you guys for having me.
You start and just tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. So I guess I am originally from Jersey. I was born in New York, but lived in Jersey most of my life. Came to Philadelphia for college and never left. Background, degrees in biomedical engineering, which I don't use at all in my day-to-day life these days. Started Ivy Experience, which is a college prep company, back in 2010 with my co-founder, Eric Carlin. And we've been in business now for almost 14 years.
Wow. So you left college with a biomedical degree and became an entrepreneur, and you don't even have anything to do with biomedicine.
Not at all. I'd say the first couple of years, I was maybe doing some math and science tutoring while we were building up the business. But beyond that, I can't say I use it much. I was asked to tutor calculus like a week or two ago for like a last minute sub. And I was like, I haven't looked at it in 10 years. I'm sure I could figure it out, but I don't want to spend the 2 hours to figure it out beforehand. So
did you start your company in college? What happened?
It was after college. So I graduated in 2009. And then I got what you'd say a real job in a consulting firm for about 3 months. It wasn't for me, and decided that needed something else going on in my life. And so I just started tutoring to pay the bills, pay rent, eat, hang out with my friends. And my business partner, we were both in college together. We knew each other during college, but we weren't necessarily always hanging out. And during winter break, honestly, everyone we knew was out of town. We decided to watch some football together, and one conversation kind of led to another. He wanted to be a freelance journalist. We graduated in 2009, where that was not really a thing anymore, with the economy and newspapers kind of going the way they were. And so he was working for a college consultant, helping with their college essays. And one conversation kind of led to another about us trying to do it on our own. And that's how the idea kind of started. Like, we figured we can do it well. We were both newer in the industry at the time. So we just started with what we knew, teaching the subjects what we knew. But as we've gone in the next 14 years, we've expanded to kind of a full college consulting firm as we've learned more about the industry. It's one where you can't just study. You just got to learn about the schools. You got to learn about the students. You got to learn what the colleges are looking for. So that took time to add more services as the years progressed.
Wow. That's interesting. So you started out just the two of you doing everything.
Basically, and it was like, it was kind of a part-time thing while we were both kind of dabbling in some other stuff. And it was one of those where, yeah, I had taken a few business classes because I had an entrepreneurship minor when I was in college, but it wasn't something that like we'd plan to do, go out, start our business. That wasn't the plan, the day of graduation, that sort of thing. And yeah, it was just the two of us, and we kind of made it up as we went along. We were hiring tutors kind of to help as the services grew, and there's only a certain amount of houses I can drive to from 3:30 to 9:30 every night in the Philadelphia area. And so we started needing more people to do some of the work. And so we started bringing tutors on, and that's kind of our initial staff. It was all part-time people, a lot of grad students, a lot of people who were in town because their partners were grad students. So yeah, that's just kind of how we grew. It was very much a service. It's been a service-based business the entire time. And so finding good staff was important. And we grew slower than we necessarily would have liked financially, but we always maintained good like standards with who we hired. And so we were always like, I'd rather have no review and say we're full than rather have bad reviews. And that was kind of our mantra the entire way through. And so we probably could have expanded a lot further if we're like, or quicker with a lower quality service. But then I don't think where we would be where we are today as a result of that, where we have negative reviews. We're just kind of throwing something against the wall and seeing what works. So
you didn't intend to be an entrepreneur. Was it how turned off you were of the corporate world after 3 months that made you start thinking about it, or it was just kind of, it just happened?
Absolutely. So there's actually a bit of a story to go with it. So I was already tired of waking up at 6, getting home at 8, and then being tired, being awake for an hour and a half and going to bed every day. So that I was already not loving that routine. But it was funny. I remember it was either my sister's birthday or the day after. So it was October 7th or 8th back in 2009. And I'm driving to work and the office was out in King of Prussia, and right where it turns from 2 lanes to 3 lanes and then 4, like all of a sudden the person in front of me just stopped. I hit the brakes. I stopped. And the person behind me just like rammed in the back of my car, and I was completely fine. She was completely fine. My bumper was cracked, but her whole front end was smashed in. And so she was like, hey, like, I want to call the cops, get an insurance claim, all that sort of stuff, just so I have the paperwork when I go to insurance. So I just call my boss and say like, hey, like, I can't leave right now. I'm going to be a little late. And then honestly, rather than asking why, I was like, hey, I was in a car accident and like, I got to wait for the cops. And rather than saying like, hey, are you okay? I was just like, okay, hurry up. Right. And that was just the quick like answer. And I don't know if he didn't process it properly or what happened, but it was just one of those where it's like, I just told you I got in a car accident. Your reaction to anyone would be, hey, are you okay? Before hurry up and get to work. Right. And so that was one of those where it's like, this is not where I want to be sort of deal.
How about that?
Karan, where did you go to school?
I went to Penn. Yeah. University of Pennsylvania.
How did your family handle it when you said you were giving up your big corporate job to go kind of to your own stuff?
Not the biggest fans. It's one of those where I think like a lot of Indian parents, especially like I was a first generation born here. It's one of those where doctor, engineer are kind of your standard like paths that you have to take, right? Like kind of the nice, steady, stable job. And so it's one of those where, especially going to a field that was like not necessarily even one of those. I wasn't starting an engineering firm, right? Or I don't have my medical degree and I'm opening up my doctor's office. It wasn't one of those. And so it's definitely one of those that took a little bit of getting used to, one of those where they were skeptical of like how viable it was, even like quite a few years in, right? Like they could see the results, but it's one of those, but like, is it going to last sort of deal? And so, yeah, it's one of those where it wasn't, let's say not the biggest fans.
So when we talk to entrepreneurs, when they start their business, did you have a plan, like a 3-year plan and a 5-year plan working towards certain goals? Did you grow by accident or was it purposeful?
To be completely honest, it probably was more by accident than purposeful. It was what we didn't sit down and be like, here's our business plan in 3 to 5 years. We're gonna, in 3 years, we want to be this big and have this much staff and break into these markets. I'd say just some of our lucky breaks in growing were honestly very accidental and lucky. We were providing a good service because when we did get those opportunities, we were able to do it. But one of our biggest success stories or biggest markets that we're successful in is out in Great Valley, Malvern, one of the suburbs of Philly, where like there was someone there who ran a community organization that ran a lot of sports and dance and that sort of thing, that sort of programming. And they were looking for something academic, particularly at the high school level, since a lot of kids are now playing high school sports and say that they don't need the organization anymore. And he saw our stuff there. I saw one of our donations at a charity auction, picked it up, be like, let me talk to these guys. And now like, that was almost 12 years ago. And since then, we've been working with the guidance office in that high school for years now. We go talk at their back to school nights, that sort of stuff. And we're a very word of mouth business, right? Like conventional marketing doesn't work for us. The comparison I use a lot of time is like, we're more like electricians or plumbers than anything else, in the sense of there are other college prep options. People ask their neighbors, people ask their brother-in-law, their sister-in-law, their friends who they use, right? They want a high quality service. They don't want just someone who can put up a shingle, right? And so our marketing has very much been getting into those schools, having those conversations, talking to parents before they're ever even clients with us.
So do you have a huge data bank or a data bank that talks about your success rate of students that you tutor or help get into schools? Do they all get into the school of their choice, their second, their third? Do you use that to market, or what kind of data do you track?
Yes. So on the like the test prep side of things, so SATs and ACTs, which is much more quantifiable, we have kind of our average increases every year. Like a lot of organizations, we do a good job, so we don't publish them. It's not one of those where we want it to come across as a guarantee, right? Because a student starting at an almost perfect score might not can't increase our even our half our average increase, right?
Right.
And so it's one of those where we'll share that information whenever people ask, but it's not something necessarily we throw out there. Most of the people are calling us again by because someone they trust, someone that they care about is passing on that information. And so there's a level of trust there once we share that information with them. In terms of college applications and the actual schools that I get into, it really does vary. We are not one of those places where they tell kids not to apply somewhere. We'll give them our honest assessment of like, hey, you have a good chance, you don't have a good chance. But if someone's dream school is their dream school, right? Right? Like, let them take a shot at it. You don't want them to have a situation at the end where they get in a bunch of other places and they're like, well, maybe I would have gotten in there, and they regret the process, right? So it's okay to fail in this process, especially if you're shooting for the moon, but it's okay to shoot for the moon if that's what you're really passionate about. The goal is to just be smart about your other options and have other options on the table that might be more of a realistic match in case shooting for the moon doesn't work out.
How, if at all, has the internet changed your business?
I would say a lot in the sense of COVID. COVID was the biggest change in terms of going virtual for us. So we were already doing virtual tutoring kind of across the country and other countries as well, particularly like there's not a lot of resources similar to what we can offer in other countries for students interested in coming to college. In the US. What COVID did was introduce a lot more people to be comfortable with online learning, right? And not always be convinced that, no, but I want a tutor in the room with my student, or I need someone who's sitting with my student. And so as a result, like as online chat platforms got better, as online like Google Documents and Google Sheets and a bunch of other programs became available for students to access where they could share their stuff with us rather than attaching a new Word document every time, right? Those things definitely made it easier for us to work with those students remotely. And now that like the SAT actually just went digital for the first time in the US last Saturday. It was the first time it was administered digitally in the US. And so that honestly is, I could be, if we're both sitting in front of the computer, it's honestly a little easier than sitting next to you because then we can screen share and that sort of stuff rather than two people hovered around a single screen. And so it's definitely made it a lot easier and easier to expand into areas we would not have otherwise. In Philadelphia, New York, LA, Chicago, there's a lot of college prep options. But if you go to some more rural areas, there just aren't, right? There aren't many options. There might be one tutor available and they can only handle so many kids, right? So it's really open. The internet has opened up different markets to us that weren't previously open to us before.
Do you still only do one-on-one training, or has this allowed you to do more than one at a time, or it's still one-on-one?
We still do almost every single thing in one-on-one. The reason being is that the idea of it is that even if we do small group, like 2 to 3 kids, you're losing that level of personalization. Whether it's right. Tutoring for a particular subject or the SATs or ACTs, our tutors take the time before sessions to make sure to plan out what they're going to teach that day. Because a student might not be bad at math, they just might be struggling geometry right before they're taking the SAT. We didn't want to go over Algebra 1 and Algebra 2 concepts. So we design our lessons for the students and for the premium that they're paying over like a class where they can maybe get 20 hours, right? For a fifth of what they would charge for us. Like that's the advantage of the one-on-one. And even if sometimes it's 2 students, you end up teaching too much to one person rather than the other one.
So your business doesn't have a high cost of capital or high, you know, cost to get into it. And so I assume there's, you know, you do have competition for that matter. Did you ever have to get outside financing, or you were able to finance the entire growth of your company yourselves?
We financed it ourselves, and it was one of those, though, we were willing to grow slowly, though, right? And so we both kind of had other things that we were doing to make money before, while the first like 3-4 years of the business, it wouldn't have been viable as our only source of income, right? And so it's one of those where we had other resources, so we were able to grow slow before we both made it a full-time thing. And so we never had other outside financing for any of this stuff.
Sounds like you have a great partnership.
Yeah, I actually got really lucky. So Eric is really good at all the things I'm not, and vice versa a little bit. You could talk to him 5 years from now and call him and he'll remember where your student went to college, what they majored in, and every single conversation he had with you. And I'll forget who I interviewed this morning, right? And I have to go back and look at my notes. So it's one of those where his ability to market, talk to parents, build those relationships with parents. There's parents he's still friends with that we worked with their kids 10 years ago and they'll still Zoom, they'll still meet him for coffee, that sort of thing. Yeah. And so like him building those relationships and me working on a lot of the organizational stuff internally was kind of the roles we fell into and the roles we were kind of better at to begin with. And so we didn't plan it that way. We didn't seek out a business partner that was good at kind of the opposite, but we got extremely lucky in that sense.
Since you didn't go to school for finance, well, you said you minored in entrepreneurship. Who was your mentor from a business perspective?
I would say, honestly, the first person to help us out, honestly, was Eric's dad. He has a strong background in business. He did a couple different things with minor league baseball, in theaters, that sort of thing. So even like from the very beginning of like how to do QuickBooks, right? And how to use QuickBooks and how to organize your accounts and things properly. That was kind of those were our first mentors. As we look more in our industry, it was people who do some of the services we provide, but not others. So particularly the college consulting portion where you learn about different colleges and that sort of thing. There's a lot of the college consultants out there who don't tutor. So we were tutoring for them while at the same time they would do the college consulting piece and we were learning from them. And so most of those college consultants are solopreneurs. They work with their 20, 30 kids a year. They're not trying to grow a company or anything beyond that. And it's an industry where everyone's willing to teach each other. Everyone's willing to collaborate. Even the professional organizations have no referral policies and that sort of stuff. And so it is a very collaborative environment. And so I wouldn't say it's a single mentor beyond that, but I would say the community as a whole is really willing to share information. And so now that we're in that position, we now have people who are starting out in the industry as counselors who we're talking through building up their business and their practices.
So are your employees all 1099 or do you actually have employees?
Everyone's an employee from our part-time staff to our full-time staff, part-time staff, everyone's full-time. They were 1099s till around 2020 when HR, the accountant, our employment attorney were like, you need to not make them. And part of it, the impetus was we were doing business in California for some time. And a lot of the laws they made as a result of Uber and Lyft in terms of contractors really made it difficult to have contractors out there. And so that was another impetus for us basically transitioning everyone to an employee.
Got it.
Ron, how much of your business is local versus all over the place?
I would say at this point, it's probably 45, 55, where 55 is all over the place. So like 55% of our business, we wouldn't be able to travel to within an hour radius. It's pretty, it usually starts with a referral from someone who was in this area when we break into a new one, right? And so, hey, someone, we have a big, me and Ami are going to a conference in Singapore, and we actually have a big contingent in Singapore because there was an expat community that we got into out there like many years ago. And since then, it's just been year after year. We were like at that one school, we just have done well. Their students have done well. And then they just keep coming back, right? And so it's less than probably half now in terms of the Philadelphia area.
Is that what you envisioned when you started? Probably not.
Honestly, no. I just figured, you know, we'd build up initially we're driving around and like going to every student's homes. We thought the next progression would be having a tutoring center or something along those lines, right? That's the next path. Once you build up the capital, get a building, put up a sign and have students come there. And over time, we just learned that's not what we wanted. We didn't want a physical space. We don't want the overhead. Like if it's all one-on-one anyway, like be in where the student's most comfortable. It can be at home, a library. Like we don't need classrooms, like classes are not what we do, that sort of thing. So we've never rented an office. We've never, or like an office in the sense of like an office that students come to. So like we've never rented space in that way. And it's probably the best thing we've ever done is not going down that path.
Sure is.
Pretty interesting. When I started multifunding, I assumed it would be local and then we might add someone in a city. And it turns out that what we proved is what we can do everything we do virtually better. That's actually our whole value proposition. We're going to introduce you to borrowers and lenders that you never knew existed before. But that's the last thing I thought when we started.
When did you first see that change over for you?
Well, every assumption I made about how the business was going to be changed within the first 6 months.
But you sort of started in the same kind of way. Like it was sort of just an idea and something you thought was going to work, right?
And it kind of was pushed forward and evolved.
Do you have an internal person who runs the finances, does the budgeting, or do you have an accountant that does that? What things do you have in-house versus using outside services for?
So we do have an accountant who handles the taxes and kind of a lot of like the applying to do business in other states and that sort of thing.
Right.
In terms of budgeting, that's basically just me. I am the somewhat bookkeeper and I keep track of all the finances and that sort of stuff. In terms of my responsibilities, I do a lot of the hiring. It's always been kind of going back to what I said, Eric's external, I'm internal, right? So hiring, we're doing a lot of interviews this week. And while I won't be fully working with that person, I'm part of the interview process and just in terms of helping evaluate candidates. We do outsource our HR. That's just something where we're still a smaller organization. A full-time HR person would kind of be a bit of overkill. So we outsource our HR. We have a payroll company that does also handle a lot of our doing business in other states or filing for payroll in other states as well, and background checks and that sort of stuff. But I would say like most of the stuff is still fairly internal beyond kind of filing with governments and like kind of a lot of the things that are paperwork intensive, where having a background in it will let you take an hour and it might take me 3 days to figure out exactly what I have to file and where.
And outsourced IT?
We don't really have that much in terms of IT issues. We use a lot of like Asana, Slack, that sort of stuff. And so it's not very tech heavy. For what we do, we have we have an employment attorney as kind of our primary attorney, but we use their law firm for anything else that we need as well. But yeah, it's one of those where if you have a computer, you can kind of work from anywhere with us, right? And a lot of the programs that we use, Google Suite, Slack, Asana, Zoom, as I mentioned, like they're, as long as your computer's working okay, you should be okay. And so we do the best we can with that. There's occasionally issues that pop up and we deal with them as they come along. So
there's no privacy issues with data or anything like that that you have to protect, correct?
Not really, no. Everything that is like financial goes into it. And so like they're keeping track of all that. We can't see any of it. In terms of our student stuff, it's all in their Google Drives. We like share permissions with the student and the families themselves. Right. We don't keep like personal information in there, like credit card numbers and stuff. Like there is information about students like telling us their story, right? And who they are as a person.
But
it's not something that would typically classify as like a major data breach where now their identity is compromised and that sort of stuff.
Ron, are your parents proud of you now?
You'd have to ask them. My mom will still occasionally, when I talk to her, just say like, so when you want to go get a master's or something, I ask why, and there's no real reasoning, but I think it's just one of those where that's what you're supposed to do, right? Like you get an engineering degree, then you get a master's. And even though it's my 15-year reunion in 2 months, it's one of those where, I think it's just, they'll never fully understand just because it's so different, right? The educational system's so different. Going to college is so different. You'd have to ask her, to be frank with you.
Tell me a little bit about your EO journey. Okay. And what made you join EO and what you've gotten out of it?
So for me, EO, the reason the person brought it to attention was actually one of our former clients. And she was like, hey, I'm part of this entrepreneurs organization. You should come check it out. The first speaker I saw at like kind of the event I was visiting, it was a guy that the Jerry Maguire movie's based on. I forgot what his real name was, but that was cool. And then I actually started an accelerator, which is kind of the learning part of EO.
Right.
And I was in an accelerator group for 2.5 years. I was basically like 17K short or 27K short. That's after a year and a half. And they're like, well, you can if you want to. I was like, I'll just pay the cheap EO and keep like learning as we go, which actually kind of worked out in terms of having accountabilities and that sort of thing, because my last 3 months in EOA were COVID. And so having people to talk to every month, like instead of an accountability every month, it's every week or every 2 weeks we're meeting. It's like, here's what I'm going to try to accomplish based upon what we have. COVID was the one time things were truly scary because there was no school and like there was nothing for us to do beyond essay work, because we knew those kids had to apply in the fall, but we didn't know about anything else. And so we also had 2 full-time people starting in April 2020. They had offers out, they'd signed their contracts, and we're like, we'll figure it out, I guess. And we did okay, like, and we were able to survive and things were good. And honestly, like the learning effects of COVID that I talked about before have been beneficial. But yeah, so then I moved to EO in July 2020. And it's been great ever since. Like when I started, we had one full-time employee and like our part-time staff was maybe 10, 15. Now it's like 12, 13 full-time people and almost 30, 35 part-time people. And so we've really grown kind of across the board, and like having EO there as kind of your business class, basically, right? Of like, how do I didn't have an employee handbook when I had one employee, right? I didn't know how to create an organizational, an org chart or anything like that. Like having like job descriptions, all that sort of things, like things that logically make sense for any larger organization. And like, but EO, well, there's no playbook. They kind of give you the playbook as you go along, right? Like, here's the problem. Like, here's what to do. And like, everyone in the group's been really helpful. Like, it's no one's ever really shut down any requests that you have, right? And so it's one of those where I do occasionally mute the WhatsApp because now there's 110 people messaging because Ami's messaging a lot. But other than that, it's been really helpful for the most part.
That's great. I can imagine that you must get a lot of referrals from being an EO.
We have worked with some EO people in the past. I don't really talk about work that much, non-solicitation, respect that side of things. And so it's one of those where we have worked with EO people in the past, but like we leave them off of like a lot of our like marketing emails and things like that, just for the purposes of like respect.
That's not the theme of EO, Lynn. I mean, sometimes you get business, but the theme, you never ask.
No, I understand that. I'm saying thinking to myself as a business owner and my kids getting ready to go to school. Oh my God, I have an EO person who does college counseling. It just seems logical. I mean, I didn't know where to send my kids for college prep. You know, there wasn't anybody in the bank who was going to help them. And I had never had a client who had that kind of a business. So I just think it's interesting. You can find people, you know, that do things that you never thought about. That's all.
Yeah.
Ron, when you look into the future, a couple of years into the future, what do you see? What's your vision?
That's an excellent question that I don't have an answer to. That's something the business partner and I have been thinking about for a while. Our industry's changed a lot in the past 3 years, and it's kind of fluctuated back and forth. For a while, it looked like standardized tests, like the SATs and ACTs, were going away. In the past year and a half, they're coming back. And so that's kind of changed one part of our thinking. The other part is, again, going back to being one-on-one, the scalability at a certain point and maintaining quality just gets more and more difficult, right? And especially with the SA side of things. And so we are working on building product that we can sell to schools and counselors and English teachers that like can help, that they can help their kids in the classroom with the SA process. They know what to look for. There's a lot of English teachers who are really willing to help their students. They're like really well-intentioned, but no one's just trained them on the process, right? What are colleges looking for? They're not looking for a high school essay. They want kids to dig deep. They want kids to be personal. They want kids to be introspective. And a lot of the essays that we see coming out of high schools, that they just don't do that, right? And then they're well-written, they're accomplishing a certain goal, they're not accomplishing the right goal, right? And so having a curriculum that we can share with schools and even underserved communities. We work with a couple community organizations. We work with a charter school in Philly with their kids on the essay an application process. And like with the charter school, we can work with 10 of their kids a year because that's like, in terms of us staffing, they get the same attention all of our regular students get. But there's another 100 some odd students who might not be able to get that attention, right, in the classroom. How can we share what we're doing with those 10 students to that charter school, to other schools in the area and even outside of the area, right? Like, how can we help those students who aren't getting those resources from like the current way things are being taught to them or introduced to them? So I would say like product development is probably the next major step, and we're in the process of doing that. And again, just quickly going back to ChatGPT made that a little scary for a little bit, right? And even colleges were like, and we were a little less worried because we're like, our argument was always, hey, if you're authentic, it can write a great paper on George Washington for you or on the Civil War for you. It's not going to be able to tell your story, right? Lynn is not going to be able to tell your story on you, right? They don't know what happened to you. And that was our argument. And colleges are now coming out and saying like, that's what we're looking for. We don't care about the amazing writing. We don't care. We want it to make sense and obviously be proofread, but like, we want your story and kind of what you guys are doing here. They want the story, and like ChatGPT is not going to be able to do that, right? Or at least right now. So
yeah, something to think about.
Lots to think about. Karan, if our listeners have students getting ready for college, they want to check you out, where do they go? I know that's not why you're on, but let's give you a little plug anyway.
Sure.
All right. Our company's Ivy Experience. Our website is myivyexperience.com, and you can find us there. We have our Facebook page as well, where we post a lot of our webinars. You can go to our YouTube page and look at our old webinars as well. We usually do one or two free webinars a month to kind of keep parents in the loop of what's going on in their grade or in the college admissions process as a whole.
Awesome.
Great story.
I'm going to share this with, I think every college grad should listen to it. So.
And always, though, there's always a little bit of luck, right? Like, there's always that little bit of luck.
There's a little bit of luck in everything, but also persistence and grit and determination and stubbornness and
timing.
Timing. Luck is a little bit of it. Imagination, creativity, determination. Yes, there's a lot, but it's a lot more than that.
And you also have to have passion when you run your own business. And that's really important. It keeps you waking up happy every morning.
Oh, for sure. I mean, early on, just seeing those kids, like, again, I do a lot less student facing stuff now, but especially initially, like those kids you're working with for 2-3 years and they get into the schools for the first time and you're like seeing it like those, like back in like 2013, 2014, 2015, when it's like our first group of students that we've known for 3-4 years getting in, it was beyond satisfying, right? Like,
yeah.
And so we maintain that to this day. We get all our students a gift when they're like figure out where they're going to go to college, just to like to buy it, help with the excitement sort of thing. So it's an exciting time. It's an important time. And we just want to do the best we can for them.
Really. Awesome.
Great. I wish you the best.
Fun as always. I think we'll see you later this week. And thank you so much. And thank you for sharing your story with us.
It's great. Thanks.
Thank you again for having me.
Thanks for joining us today on OmniSites. Since 2010, multifunding has helped businesses achieve their biggest growth goals through creative and personalized funding solutions, working with a network of the nation's top lenders. Visit us at multifunding.com, where you can meet our advisory team and learn more about how we help entrepreneurs fund their future.